our main speaker, JoJo.
Lots of women here. Hi, family. My name is JoJo, and I'm an addict. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
All right, real quick. I'm from New York, but I live in Florida now. I moved around a lot of places. I have a lot of experience with sponsorship, being a sponsee and a sponsor. But in order for you to understand my sponsorship relationships, I have to give you a little background of where I came from and who I am and why I'm who I am. So I come up, like I said, in New York, Long Island, as a little girl. My mother made a geographical move. My father was a raging alcoholic, although he was a pillar of the community where we lived, and so it got so bad that she did the move, right? So we moved into this town, what appeared to be a lily white town. Right, and I remember clearly, I remember I had to be four, and we're driving down the street, and it's the first time I ever saw a person of color. And I said to my mom, "Who is that?" And she said, "Just another one of God's creations." And that's who my parents were, right? So my mother stumbled upon an area, and I'm giving you this history, it's crucial to my experience in sponsorship with women. My mother just stumbled upon an area of that lily white town that was appalling to her. Back then, it was called the colored section. Now we call it around the way. Anybody knows what that means. So my parents got busy. My parents were way ahead of their times. They got involved in the civil rights movement. They pioneered it in Long Island, blah, all that. And I say all that to say, back then, where your mama went, you went. So I was four. It was the summer. And I made a whole bunch of friends around the way. Connected to this day. But then I start school. Now remember, this was an affluent town of Long Island. And so we walked to school, and the other children that lived, the town was broken up into sections. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. There's the colored section, there's the low-income section, that's where we live. Middle class section, and if I offend anybody, I'm very sorry, I'm just giving you my story. And then there was Jew Hill. That's what we called it, right? So the kids that lived in the middle income and low income, they walked to school together. I, however, walked to school with my friends. So the parents who were walking their children to school saw me with my friends. And the white children were told not to talk to me. You got to remember, I'm 67 years old. We're talking a long time ago. I didn't understand. I didn't care. That was my life. I grew up that way. Never had a white friend until high school. Like, for real, for real. That's how bad it was back then. Mm-hmm. So I get to high school, and there was a whole lot of fighting going on back then. If you guys remember, if you're old enough like me to remember the racial tension, man, we hooked up with another family of color whose mother died, so my parents adopted them, and so we became our own little gang. But when it came to the racial tension, like, we didn't know what side we were supposed to be on. You know what I mean? So I was fighting every day, and I was fighting white people every day. And so it was a huge identity crisis for me. So fast forward, and then jungle fever hit. You all know what that was, right? So now everybody wanted to be my friend. But again, for the wrong reason. So I'm saying this to say I grew up not trusting Caucasian women at all. And I can't even give you the details. So now here I come in, fast forward, it's a recovery, and I'm supposed to get a sponsor. And back then, Brenda might be able to identify with this, where I was. It was the blind leading the blind. There were no women getting clean and staying clean where I got clean. So it was slim pickings to begin with. And so it was suggested for me to go to the other fellowship and find a sponsor. So you know what I was going to find over there. But there was this Hispanic woman in between, right? I mean, see, this was an issue for me, for real. So she was sponsoring me. I don't even know who had the more clean time because, again, nobody was staying clean. Women, females, right, back then. So we connected. I began to trust her. We were doing work together. And I was allowing some things, you know, some of the layers to be peeled back, but not a whole lot. There's still some trust issue there. She had the virus like everybody else back then. And eventually, a couple of years down the road, she passed away. Her husband did, and then her little boy did. And so, if I go backwards, the other issue I had with women was I had four older sisters. You would think I didn't have any. Because I was just the kid that was in the way, right? So I'm abandoned, I'm rejected, I'm all that stuff, right? And I'm blaming a race of people, my people, right? Sounds crazy, but this was my story, right? So now I'm sponsorless. And my job took me out of New York. I'm in Pennsylvania now. I know I need a sponsor. And so we got to do what we got to do, right? So I found a sponsor who looked like me. I began trusting. We did a whole lot of work together. I dealt with a whole lot of trauma, but not the meat of my trauma. You know, it was talked about all weekend, where we can only deal with what we can deal with when God brings it to us, right? But he brought this woman to my life. We did a lot of work for a good amount of years, and then she left the fellowship, abandoned and rejected again, right? So I come back to New York, and I'm staying under the radar. I'm making meetings. I'm not doing a whole lot of work anymore. I don't have a sponsor, and I'm staying under the radar. Don't talk to me. I'm not going to talk to you. I mean, it was like that, with years clean. I come back to New York. And I'm sitting. I finally get a home group. Surrender on Sunday at the time. Still there. It's a great meeting. And it's an anniversary. I don't know if you guys know what an anniversary is, where the meeting is set aside for the celebrant, and they have guest speakers come. And so I'll never forget it. I was sitting, somehow I was in, usually I sit at the end. I wasn't at the end, I was in the next chair. And my mama named me Esther, is that how she says? She comes, she sits there, and a little while later, some call me Mark, sits over here. And I'm like a sandwich, and they're best friends talking, and I'm like, really? And they're both people of color. I have to say that. Normally I would never make mention of that, but it's important. And he's in a zoot suit, with the hat, you know, he's dressed. His wife's here, by the way. God bless her soul. And so he gets up to share, and God says to me, there's your sponsor. I told you this would happen if I just mentioned his name, man. And I thought, are you kidding me? He's a man, you know? And I also had issues with white men, by the way, and I don't even want to get into that. Oh, my God, like what was done to me because of my friends and what I saw done to my friends. I didn't let a white man in this fellowship touch me for 10 years. How deep it goes. My three brothers are who protected me in the streets. Only white men. My father was abusive. So here's Mark standing in front of me. And I'm scared to death. I'm frozen. But when my higher power speaks to my spirit, I have to move. So he knew I was scared. And I asked him, I need a sponsor. Will you sponsor me? You know, if anybody knows him, he laughs. Oh, of course, baby, I'll sponsor you. Now, it was prevalent in New York. And if I give you the history of why he sponsored women, it has to do with step work and not having step work and knowing how to do a step work, but he knew how to do step. It started like that. So I went on this journey with this sponsor. I don't know, maybe 10 years. I don't remember. But it was time. It was time for me to open up those doors of trauma. And this was the man God chose. I never did this for 20 years. I wouldn't get up in front of people. I couldn't. We uncovered that trauma together. Things that were done to me by my dad, not sexually, but abusive. used to have late at night. I'm a family of nine, and, you know, lining us up against the wall with flashlights and calling us every name in the book. And, you know, I never shared that detail. So being in front of people, no way that was ever going to be. And I would speak from the floor, but I couldn't get in front of people anywhere. You know what I mean? I'm still the behind-the-scenes person. But he kept saying, amongst other things, you just have to do it. Until it's okay if you fall apart. It's okay if you have a meltdown. And so I would always do what I was instructed to do. I'm one of those sponsors and one of those sponsees. Mm-hmm. I did what I was told, and I expect my sponsees to do the same. That's just how I was raised up in here. And so, at my 25th anniversary, and again, I got to be up here. First time I'm being up here. I got all kinds of speakers speaking for me, but now I got to get up here. And I'm thinking I'm on the other side of what I just shared. And I start to share about it, and the meltdown began. When I say meltdown, like the first time I did get in front of people, I was taped. Not like this. I didn't know I was being taped. Because what happens is, you ever look into a kaleidoscope, there's 100 more of you guys. Like, there's thousands of people. I can't hear. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm sick to my stomach. I'm going to lose it. The whole, and everything is spinning around. And what I didn't understand, this was happening on the inside of me. I thought you could see this happening to me. So I shared, and I was handed the cassette tape, and I go home and listen to this. And I listened to myself, and it was just as normal as could be. So I knew it was the inside work that still needed to be done. So we're doing the work, and so it's time for me to celebrate. I get up there to share. The same thing happens to me, and he's in the back of the room, and he goes like this. Okay, shut it down. Like, how? So why am I going to, how? So a very good friend of mine was doing the cake and the candles. She knew. She knew this. She lights the candles. Wow, it's hard to share. I never shared that part, those details. But I'm in a room with women, so she came up with the cake, sang happy anniversary, and that was it. I was done. But I wasn't done. The work wasn't done, because I'm still not connecting with all women. The first woman who was Caucasian that I sponsored, we still are connected. She's just so overjoyed that she was the one. It wasn't until the early 2000s. Because I sponsored my sisters. That's who they were to me. You know, I always remind myself, I'm in this white skin suit. Like, some people are like, who are you? Like, I was raised in that culture, and so that was where I was comfortable. That's where I could identify. That's who I was. You know, and so I got an assignment. I want you to go out east and find an all-white meeting. Make it your home group, and it'll remain your home group until you know how to deal with your own people. Until you learn to love your own people, until you learn to like your own, until you understand, till we get to the bottom of what this is. Because it's not you. It's not you. It's me. Right? It's a lack of trust. And so, and now I'm still sponsoring the people I choose to sponsor, the women that gravitate towards me. I'm not saying no, but none of y'all are gravitating towards me. And I guess, again, that was me. I went to that home group. And thank God that I follow instructions. Thank God that I do what I'm told. I didn't want to do that. I was so uncomfortable. Oh, my God, there was no identification there for me, really. That's what I thought. How could there not be identification in a room of people, no matter what color they are? We're all addicts. So this was deep-rooted in me, like so deep-rooted in me, and sometimes I still have to check it. You know, I'm talking not in here anymore, but out there. You know, because that's always my go-to, you're a racist. It's always my go-to, and it's something that I have to check constantly, because that's not always the truth. I used to say, yeah, it is with white men, though. I did say that all the time. I never dated a white man. Never. I couldn't imagine. Oh, that's how I felt. Like I have some of y'all feel? Listen. It was grossed me out. No, for real. And it was because of the lack of trust and the fear. Like, what are they really going to, what do they really want from me? What are they going to do to me? Because I saw so much. So I went out to that home group. That's where I picked up my first white female sponsee. I stayed there. I don't know. I think it might have been 2 years. I don't know. But it was in that meeting, the first time ever, that I began to trust all Caucasian people for who they were, not because they were white or whatever. And this big dude, this big country dude, so always try to hug me. I would do this, but I'm not opening myself up to you. I'm just not. And this guy persisted. And he just thought I didn't like him. And so finally, you know, I got to a place where I was comfortable and I trusted him. And then I realized, wow, there's really nothing about him. This was still my stuff that I had to continue to work on. And so I stayed there until I was comfortable, until I made friends, until I understood that it's not black and white, red, green, blue. When we in here, we're just recovering addicts, right? And white people aren't so bad after all. That's what I'm saying. And my siblings are like, who are you? Because I'm younger. Well, my brothers understood, but my older sister's like, who are you? Like, they didn't experience what I experienced. I was way younger. They were already out of the house. But I took that everywhere I went, in every scenario, in every situation. And so this is why we keep coming back. This is why we have a sponsor. That's why there's always more work to do. It's that peeling of the layer. I think the last 3 years, I did more work than I thought I ever did. And so the preparation. Mark was the preparation to introduce me back to who I am. Who I am is who I am. I can't change it. Right? I can only change what's in here. And so I moved to Minnesota. He remained my sponsor. But I knew it was time for me to make a change. Not just because he was a man and I needed a woman sponsor. That's not what it was about. I needed to do something different. And a lot of people in New York, when I made the change with this wonderful woman in Minnesota, they were like, could you have more clean time than her? You could probably run rings around her when it comes to the literature. That's not why I was making the change. You know what I mean? And it's not about that. I never had a sponsor that had more clean time than me until today. This is how it was. Like I said, women weren't staying clean where I came from. But there was a different kind of work I had to do with her. There was a gracefulness about her. There was a love that she had for all people. Like, that's rare, I'm sorry, but it's rare. You know what I mean? Like, genuine. Genuine, where there's no nothing that exists inside of her. And she also had what I wanted. You got to have something I need and want. And that's what I said to her. When I asked her to sponsor me, she damn near dropped on the floor. She said, why me? Like, I was thinking of asking you to sponsor me. And I said, no. I need you. I didn't say I want you to sponsor. I need you to sponsor me. And so that relationship lasted for several years until COVID hit. But in the relationship, you know, she sponsored 16 white women that I had to be friends with. I didn't have to be, but y'all have to deal. I had to be around them. And, when I went to Minnesota, a sister, she approached me. She said, I'm really uncomfortable with what I'm about to say to you because I was always told I had to have a sponsor that looked like me. I said, who told you that? I mean, that's not something I heard. It's something that, you know, I'm the complete opposite, so welcome. And she asked me to sponsor her. I'm like, wow, I'm back in my comfort zone. Because there are some things that are different. There are. And so I feel like I have the benefit of both to be able to help people through things, to identify, not just in addiction, but just in life. You know what I mean? And so I picked up other sponsees up there while I was working with Susan, nobody knows her. I know, Brenda probably knows her. But he introduced me back to myself and the people that I thought was the enemy. And that was the purpose. I don't think that would ever happen. You know, people come into our life for a reason, a season in a lifetime. Like, he's my lifelong, lifetime friend, because I say it all the time. He saved my life. He saved me. You know, and it's not about him, really, but, you know, kind of, he's gifted. But it was who God handpicked, and I was obedient when I stood in front of him. Like, that was the hardest thing, because you could never tell me I would have a man for a sponsor, because I just didn't imagine that would work. But it worked. He's still my go-to person, because nobody but him knows me through and through, inside out, so maybe heaven. But knows, I mean, and he would know stuff. I'm like, how do you know that? Like, one of those gifted people, like, how do you even know that? And he laughed, you know, that laugh. And so from Minnesota, now all this time, my sponsorship is my niche, by the way. This is not. I thrive in sponsorship because of where I came from and what I've gone through and what I have not only survived but got victory over and got healing. I put expectations on my sponsees. People know that about me. Like, I am not a sponsor in name only. You don't call me your sponsor if you're not calling me and doing some work. That you choose if I'm your sponsor by default. You know, because there's still a lack of female sponsorship everywhere that I go. I'm not a tough sponsor anymore. Susan did that for me. You don't have to have that. I'm from New York at the top, exterior. I don't smile unless I got something to smile about. Like, I never cried, just so you know, until I moved to Minnesota and these crying women rubbed off on me. Like, oh my God. So that's why I get the way I get, because I have still not learned how to control what's coming out of me, because I haven't had the time to do that. You know, and it's not even about a sensitivity. It's about what's still so very raw. And I don't want it to not be raw. So I sponsor women. Mark gave me a number because of who I am and how I pour into these women. My limit was 6 women. That was it. And I still hold myself to that. Because you are going to be in my life, and I'm going to be in your life, and we're going to do some work. And I don't have time to do that with 10 women. I don't have time to... I don't know how my sponsor did that in Minnesota, but her motto, is that the right word? She says, if they're not calling me and they don't do the work, then I don't have anything to worry about, and I'll just focus on the ones that are. But then, I don't know. I look at it like they're floundering around, you know? I don't know. So I was a very tough sponsor for many, many years. And my reason was, is, like I said, if I can work through this kind of trauma and this kind of the abuse that I haven't even shared about, there is no excuse for you not to be doing some work. There's nothing we can't get through together, and that's just how I sponsor. And I let people know that from jump. From jump, I say, listen, you're asking me to sponsor you. Did you read the sponsorship pamphlet? That's who I am. I'm not anything else. Something else may occur. Listen, I sponsored Heather. You guys heard her share, right? She's my daughter-in-law now. You know, that's... She was my second Caucasian sponsor. But we're family now. But when she asked me, I said something I never said before, and I could see it in my mind's eye. Like the deer caught in the headlocks. She said, will you sponsor me? And I turned around and I said, there's a line out the door. There's so many young women like you that need a sponsor. You do what I say, I'll sponsor you. If you don't, I'm not sponsoring you. I never said that to anybody. But there's a reason. She could share that with you. There was a reason why she needed to hear that. I didn't know that, but that's the kind of sponsorship that I gravitate towards. I need somebody who's going to say stuff to me that needs to be said, and I need to be able to do that, but in a loving and caring way, and that's what I got from my previous sponsor. there is a way, there's a delivery that I didn't know, and that's what I wanted from her. My delivery was harsh, and my excuse was I'm from New York. That's who we are. But that doesn't have to be who I am. So I moved to Florida via Myrtle Beach. Pandemic, lost my job. I had to move down to Myrtle Beach where some siblings were, who still don't get me. And then I'm in Florida. And in the interim, I dealt with a whole lot of other trauma, molestation trauma, I didn't even talk about God. I was directly connected to God. So when I got here, it took me 10 years, by the way. My sister used to browbeat me with the big book. But she kept talking about God, and I couldn't get with the God because I was molested in the church by the bishop, Monsignor, and two priests. And I buried that, and I buried that, and I buried that. But that disconnected me to any possibility there could be a God. And I just started 3-4 years ago dealing with that. Although I surrendered, I understood in some of that step work that I did that had nothing to do with God. It had to do with man and man's, our free will. We all have free will. This is what I tell my sponsees. We all have free will. God can't take their free will from them and let me keep mine. So it's like a domino effect. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I was affected by their free will. That's how I have forgiven them. I understand their deal, and it had nothing to do with God. But God was there always, because I could go back in my life and realize that first of all, I shouldn't even be here. Every single person I ever used with is dead from the virus. Two husbands. I never had the virus. Why am I here? You see what I'm saying? Like that was God's gift to me, and I understood that very early on in recovery. That if I had to go through everything I went through, so sponsorship is my niche. If I could help others walk through the same pain, I'm good. I have a purpose. When I was, I think, 6 months or a year clean, I got that. Because I'm one of those analytic people. I want to know why. Why did that happen to me? Why the heck did that happen to me? Well, why not me? And someone shared that with me. Well, just you wait. You walk through it. You get on the other side and watch how many women you help find their healing through some devastation like that. And so that's why sponsorship became my niche. You know, that was my purpose, to try. If I could just help one person today. And that's why I was so adamant about doing the work. I don't play with this. I don't play with sponsorship. I don't play with the program. You know, people say to me, why are you still here? Why do you still have a sponsor? Why do you still do step work? Why do you still go to meetings? Because my recovery is a process, and so is relapse. So I'm going one way or the other. That never changes. That never changes. And I get that. I have they still have the gift of desperation from way, way back. I don't ever want to lose that. So the sponsor I have today, most people know, I knew of, but I was on a mission. You know, you get on a mission. First of all, I was taught you should always be 5 women in your life that could sponsor you at any given moment. Anybody hear that? So any given moment, you should have 5 women that you could say, can you sponsor me? But I had that in New York, but that dissipated. But I had 3 women in mind. But if I'm going to switch sponsors, I want to be able to have FaceTime with my sponsor. I always had a long-distance sponsor, you know, until I came back to New York, and that was such a blessing. I got so accustomed to having FaceTime, even though I didn't have a whole lot of FaceTime, because he was a man. He has a wife. He has a family. You know, and I had to be very careful with that. You know what I mean? If I wanted to see him, I'd go to his home group. That's how that worked. We did step work at the diner. You know, we're very careful. Never got in a car with him. That kind of stuff until, I think, 2 years ago when a mutual friend died. And this is the first time I was in a car with him by myself. Very careful with those kinds of boundaries, right? But if I'm going to make a change, then I'd like to be able to sit in front of my sponsor and do step work or go out for coffee or whatever. So I'm putting feelers out. Somebody up in Minnesota who's from New Jersey, lives up there now, and he mentioned her name. And I say, yeah, but she's in New Jersey. He goes, no, she's down in Florida now. Okay. Go to a convention. She's the women's rap speaker. And I'm like, that, but she said she's from New Jersey. So she's a snowbird. That's good enough for me. Right? Because she didn't know me. You know, she didn't, I wanted to start fresh. I'm on a new journey. I wanted to start fresh with somebody who doesn't know any of what I just shared. Not that she doesn't need to know that. She'll get there. But what's happening today? You know, what defects are flying around today? How am I acting out today? That's something that, you know, I don't have to be stuck in the past. Now I'm in the present. Because there's always, always going to be something that comes up. My feelings are always going to be all twisted up because of, man, if you guys weren't in the 6 and 7 step workshop today, you need to get whatever you get because you can't get CDs anymore. Wow, I'm going to listen to that more, 10 more times. The way that she broke it down, I don't know if she's in here. But I was like, whoa, that's where I'm at. The here and now, currently, who am I? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be doing? What am I not supposed to be doing? That kind of stuff. So it's fresh. So I did my first step with my new sponsor. And she said, you know, don't make it a big deal. Just, you know, answer the questions or whatever. It's not another step working guide. We're doing something different because we do things different. We go back. This is the old stuff. Brenda probably remembers the old step working sheets. But when I went over that step one with her, I couldn't believe what was uncovered. There's a lot of identification there, but she, again, had the gift over the phone, the wisdom to speak into my life and say, you keep calling that something else, but it's really people-pleasing. No one's ever said that to me. You couldn't tell me I was a people, I don't give a shit about people. That's what I always said. But there's other reasons why we people-please. Why we want to say no, but say yes. And I forget what the situation was. I would bring her a situation. And she'd break it down. And I thought, and this is just the first step. Like, holy mackerel, I can't wait to do the second step, which I just completed. But what I'm saying is this. We're not married to our sponsors. It works until it doesn't. It may work all of your life. I've had sponsees leave, and that's painful. That's very painful. But it is what it is. You know what I mean? And I had to learn how to navigate through that. You know what I mean? Because, like I said, I get attached. You know, I pour myself into my sponsees. They mean the world to me. They hold me down, you know, the two-way street. But if, just like me, when I moved on, I remind myself there's a reason and I have to let go. That's not easy, you know, as a sponsor. So it's a process. Sponsorship is a process. For me, I'm a major isolator. And this is something that came out of my first step. She said to me, we all can fall into isolation. But we have to remember, no matter how long we are here, no matter how much work we have already done, we still must insulate ourselves with the program. And that blew my mind. The opposite of isolation for us is we need to insulate. And think about insulation. Like, I get the visual. You know, if you don't insulate your house, what's going to happen? You're going to freeze to death. If I don't insulate myself with the program, with working the steps, I missed one. I had a sponsor before I went to Susan. I went somewhere else in Chicago. Y'all know the deal. But she was in school and didn't have time to do step work individually, so she was doing group work, and I don't do well with that. So that's why I moved on. I forgot that piece. And that may work for people. It works. She also had a zillion sponsees, but it doesn't work for me. I like to keep myself in a place as I'm a newcomer and I need help. You know, and I say this when I shut it down. I always say, most of the time, if you see something, say something, don't let me die because I have clean time. Treat me like a newcomer. And that's all I got.